Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, it's game week 4 and no wins at home. It's Linden to London as Dykes is set for Rangers, but not that one. And what's more important, commemorating VJ Day or Kilmarnock versus St Johnstone? It's easy, right? It's the first one. But apparently not if you're the Tory leader, or the new one for that matter. I'm Andrew Slavin here in sunny Lisbon, but back home, sheltering from the storms, it's my wee pal from The Telegraph, JJ Bull. Hello, JJ.
Good afternoon, evening, morning, everyone.
And good night. How are you, JJ? How is everything?
It's good. It's finally started raining, as I'm sure everyone at home in Scotland has had for a while anyway.
Well, it's lovely here. It's lovely here in Lisbon. It's very, very nice. It's hot all day, topping up my tan. Not quite, because I'm working every single day. It's hard work out here. But the big question for you, JJ, is who can train and who can't train in Edinburgh right now?
Well, it's a setup for a good answer. The answer, as we all know, is Hibs and Hull, but not Hearts.
Yep.
Because the Championship teams were told they're not allowed to train this week. So Hearts wanted to get back onto it, prepare for their triumphant next season to return to the Premiership. And even though Hull are training at the same ground as them, Hull are allowed to, but Hearts aren't, and it's caused a bit of unrest.
Well, even more so because, you know, Hearts have got a semi-final in 10 weeks' time. So, I mean,
that is ages.
It fails to impress me when you think, just use your common sense. Use your common sense.
But remember what this podcast is about, Andrew. It's Scottish football. And we don't need to talk about it more because nothing makes sense.
Nothing makes sense in Scotland.
The SPFL don't tend to help anyone out. It's all nonsense.
Beautiful. Well, like you said, enough about Hearts. Let's get into this week's show. We're going to start with the teams that are in third and fourth this week.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
That's Clark with the layoff. Chalmers strong on the ball, quick feet. This looks promising. Nicky Clark! That's what you call instant impact. 5 minutes off the bench, and Clark scores his second goal of the season.
So Dundee United came from behind to beat Ross County 2-1 at Dingwall as the new boys prove their worth on the road. JJ, do you think United were deserved winners in this one?
I think anyone would have been deserved winners in this game because both teams played very well. I think Ross County in particular looked really good. Since Benji mentioned that they were against Motherwell, and I thought they were all right when I watched them before a couple of weeks ago, but I really noticed that they are actually quite a good, entertaining, attacking team.
Ross County.
And they seem really organised, and they've got there's some players playing quite well for them. But Dundee United are, where maybe Ross County are focused on attacking play at the moment, Dundee United seem to be more organised at the back, right? So then I think it's easier to destroy than create. So they sit back a little deeper and they don't send so many players forward quite so quickly. But the goal that Paulett scored is a bit of a stramash. And the finish by Clark for the second is really, I love those tight angle finishes. You would never try it on Pro Evo because you know the goalkeeper will save it. But in real life, it's worth a go.
No, I think the goals were good, but I think Ross County can be pretty hard done by. More so because Ross Stewart had three good opportunities to score and he didn't. Well, I think the boss for Ross County, Stuart Kettlewell, said that Stuart should have had a hat-trick and he should have. And if, you know, those are the differences. And you go on to lose the game when you're actually playing quite well, as you say.
Sure, but you can't really rely. I mean, you see teams missing chances all the time. Like, it was the same as Manchester United in the Europa League. You don't take your chances, you don't win, but you still have to find ways to not let in scrappy goals. I just think that whatever the difference is with Stuart Kettlewell being in charge, it's definitely working. I really like it. They could even have said that they should have been due a penalty early on because Payton went down in the box. It's not a penalty for me, Clive. I don't know what you think.
No, not a penalty for me.
I think when players dive in the box or when they roll around after being hurt, like a tackle, they should be made to explain their behaviour to their families afterwards.
Like give them lines at the end of the match.
No, they should just have, well, I guess so in a way, but they have to sit in front of the TV and rewatch it and like, Daddy, why are you crying when you didn't get hurt? It's like, well, son, I was, it's cheating. It's called cheating. And it's a thing.
Yeah, explain themselves at the end of the game. Decent. I like that. That I can see the SPFL bringing that one in. I'd like to say that this is a pretty good start for Dundee United, isn't it? Because
yeah, definitely.
Coming through, brand new manager. You know, you would think that would maybe make the team feel a little bit unstable, kind of unsure what the future might be. But they seem to have bought in to Mickey Mellon's kind of work ethic. If that's the best way to say it, because we've spoken about it before, just how he's on at his players all the time to just reset, go again. It just seems to be they've bought into this idea that they have to work hard to get a good start. Because if you start well in this season, you're going to have the best possible chance to not be relegated. And that's what Dundee United have to have.
It's a weird league, right? If you can get about 15, 20 points early on, you're basically not going to get relegated. It's kind of
Probably, because you can still pick up a couple of draws here and there. And we all know that, you know, when Lauren Shanklin didn't play the weekend, but if he comes back, the real hope for United is that he will reach the heights that he has in the lower divisions. And he has to, because for him, he probably doesn't want to stay at Dundee United forever. But that's obvious for any player with good ability and good finishing ability. So he has to come back, and it'll always be good for Dundee United to sell and get some good money for him. But anyway, that's that one. Dundee United get Celtic next. But Ross County will travel to fifth place St Mirren. So up next, a Boer draw at Easter Road. Hibs and Motherwell have had very different starts to the season, but nothing could separate the two sides on Saturday evening. Motherwell did have the ball in the back of the net though, but it was ruled out for offside. So JJ, was it the right decision?
If he's touched it, yes. This is contentious with offside calls. So Jordan White he strikes it sweetly on his right foot, I think. Right foot. Anyway,
why
it's
are you
going
to like that?
Because it's the old Pro Evo guy, ISS 64, the commentator. Nigeria are in the lead. Do you remember that?
Wow. No.
Brazil are in the ascendancy. Anyway,
Jordan White.
Jordan White hits it with his right foot and it goes in the goal. But Seedorf is just the other side of the defender. And you can see that he's sighting the keeper. So, like, the keeper cannot see the ball. But he doesn't touch it. Or does he? I don't know. I've not seen enough angles. I've looked for different angles of it. I've been through Y Scout. Can't find anything from behind the goal. You're an angles cameraman. You love all this stuff. They don't have it on the broadcast feeds I've seen. So, I mean, I think by the letter of the law, I think that means he's offside. And it's a bit of a shame because, you know, White just thought he was in. So that was a bit of a shame. The rest of the game was, I can't tell if it was like rubbish. It was very dull. Nothing really happened. But for me, tactically, it was quite interesting because you have Hibs who are set up to kind of be quite direct and strong on the counter. Motherwell, who in the past have been good at that, but are playing a really possession-heavy game. And so they need to beat. So both teams need to be careful of each other. Like, Hibs can't let Motherwell have all of the ball, but Motherwell can't let Hibs hit them on the counter, so they can't really open up in the way that they want to be able to control the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. But there were opportunities in this game. Probably one of the best I saw was Daryl Horgan whipping the ball in, and it was Nisbet just in the six-yard box, headed it just over the bar.
There was a couple of bits and pieces, but it was mostly like both teams struggled to kind of to create. Like, build-up play was fine, but anything in the final third was pretty locked down. There was a few chances that the teams created, not a huge amount of shots. I think the match stats, I'll have to find them for a second.
Motherwell had 17 and Hibs had 12.
Right. So I think a lot of those from outside the box, kind of long-range hits. I think David Turnbull was doing a lot of good. He was forcing the ball into the box, which is what you want to do, a lot of vertical passes. But the teams were so not worried about each other, but they didn't want to be able to concede chances to each other. So as soon as you got in the final third, a lockdown and no one was able to really ping the ball quickly enough to take advantage of the others being in transition. So Hibs wanted to play the way they have done in the past few games, but couldn't quite do it. And I think they put Scott Allen on in the second half because they thought that would be able to unlock something, but you can't because Motherwell were just locked down. And a point for each, I think, was exactly what the result should have been for this game.
Stephen O'Donnell signed for Motherwell from Kilmarnock, which is an interesting one because he trained for Kilmarnock all the way through the summer and they were paying for his COVID testing. So,
is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So do you think it's a bit unfair that he's went to Motherwell and not maybe stayed at Kilmarnock?
No, I mean, he was a free agent. He's maybe training with them for free, but they don't have the money to offer him. And he's obviously looking for, what, is he 28, I think? So he's looking for, mm-hmm. this would be his last big contract. He can realistically get a three-year deal from somewhere, probably the Championship in England, depending on who wants to take him on. So he doesn't want to sign anything long-term in Scotland because it's not going to be the money that he wants. So a deal up to January means he can basically play for Motherwell for the next few months and he could still sign for another club because of like FIFA rules. He could still move to a club in England, even though he's technically signed and registered for Motherwell now, which would be good for him. But yeah, I think he'll see, playing for Motherwell, who are higher up the table, are likely to be more... Well, they're in Europe as well, so you might get European football. Like, there's, it makes a lot of sense to me, yeah. And he needs to be playing at the moment.
There you go. Well, Hibs look to return to winning ways against Hamilton next, and Motherwell will face St Johnstone. So we're going to discuss their win next.
5 minutes to go. Kilmarnock with Findlay should tidy this up. Oh, he's shot there with the pass back. Michael O'Halloran is in here for St Johnstone. Saints steal it. It's stoppage time. That's just a hopeful punt forward from Robertson. Findlay tries to recycle the ball. And surely St Johnstone will be going home now with all the points, with virtually the last kick of the game.
St Johnstone got their first win of the season as O'Halloran was gifted a winner in the 94th minute against a 10-man Kilmarnock. Three goals in this match, three major defensive mix-ups, you'd have to say. But at the end of the match, there was a lot of questions about Kilmarnock and their decision-making. Particularly, I would say, for the winner, you know, that pass back. And, you know, fair play, O'Halloran saw it. And his pace has always been his biggest attribute. But could they have done better to defend that?
I mean, yes. But, yeah, obviously. But it just, I don't know if it's decision-making. Like, the pass is just... It's not enough on it. So the pass, but I think it's, is it, who is the player that plays the ball back? Mm. I was trying to work it out and I can't work out the player as who plays it back. But I think Findlay then chases it in and as it goes around the goalkeeper to score, Halloran goes around the goalkeeper to score, defender just collapses to the ground. He's like, no, you blew it up, you idiots. Like in, you know, that Planet of the Apes bit. And he's smashing the ground. Killy are fine. I don't know what you make of this game, Slaven, but like, St Johnstone, both these two teams are going to be in amongst the, I think the bottom six probably all season long. There's good parts to both, there's negatives to both, and I think it's very early in the season to say whether one's struggling or one's doing well. But
as much I thought St Johnstone actually played some nice stuff in this game, particularly in the build up to the equaliser. I just think the structure where they play passing football. I'm kind of surprised. I don't think St Johnstone really played defensive-minded football that maybe we would have expected.
Well, we said that a couple of weeks in a row now, haven't we, about St Johnstone?
Yeah,
they're playing a little bit more open.
I'm actually really surprised.
It's a different system as well. They're playing like a 3-5-2. I'm not sure how often St Johnstone have done that. I've also noticed as well that Ali McCann's playing a bit deeper than maybe he was last season. So he's...
That's interesting because you'd think, because Liam Craig was in that game and you wouldn't want him to be bombing up the field.
No, but Craig was what you'd call the six in this game. He was kind of the holding player in the midfield three. And McCann was able to get forward a little bit more. But in recent weeks, like from the start of the season, I think McCann's had a bit of a deeper role. All these games now, we're already in the weird part of the season where the next few weeks are going to be, Kilmarnock won this one, St Johnstone won that one. It's going to be a bit of a mix and match.
Well, yeah, because considering Kilmarnock were able to get a draw against Celtic as well.
Yeah. The other thing that St Johnstone's relevant to us is they have two games this week. They had that win against Kilmarnock, which is big. Then they've got Aberdeen coming up on Thursday. So not double, but you get more points for your fantasy teams.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that later. Well, Kilmarnock will go on to face Rangers next weekend. So let's talk about Rangers. They were unable to break down a dogged defensive Livingston at the Tony Macaroni, the best named stadium in the division. 0-0, the scoreline. Was this nerves for Rangers, missing the likes of Joe Aribo, who's always really good at receiving the ball at his feet, or actually kind of credit to Gary Holt for being able to contain Rangers and not allowing them a sniff around the box? Because it was a dull game.
Yeah, Rangers had about, is it 80% possession? They had the whole game. They dominated it. That's exactly how the two teams set up. When you play against a team like Livingston, the way they set up, the kind of generally accepted way of breaking that down is to move the ball quickly, stretch the pitch, and make sure you can get the ball forward. So you stretch it so you make the pitch wide to force the opposition defence from side to side and to create gaps so you can thread the ball through. You need to have a good tempo, and you need to have players making runs to stretch the opposition defence and just to offer passes. And one of the criticisms I've seen since the game is that Rangers didn't need to have both Ryan Jack and I was about to call him Chris Kamara, but it's not Chris Kamara. Glenn Kamara in midfield. You can sort of see what the point of that is. And when you have like Ryan Kent, who likes to play inside the pitch, and Yanis Hadji, who likes to play inside the pitch, you're kind of limiting the way you attack. Because the whole thing with Gerrard's system is it's quite narrow, and I think that's to help with counter-pressing. It's quite cloppy in the way they're trying to do that. Because then the width comes from the fullbacks, Barisic and Tavernier, who were able to get forward the entire time because of the way Livingston were set up. So like, Livingston's way of attacking is going to be from set pieces and getting the ball quickly through counters. Rangers' width has to come from the fullbacks. But then every time they put the ball in the box, Livingston were just throwing bodies at it as though their lives depended on that technique. Technique? What am I talking about? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Livingston defended amazingly. Livingston defended with everyone behind the ball and everyone in the box, and they're just hurling themselves at it. It's not amazing defending. It's not like they've been on coaching and Gary Holt is hurling balls into a box and saying, like, now dive for it with your head. Do you know? It's just people determined to get the ball away. That's not to say they didn't do it very well. It's obviously that they did, because they came away with a point. I also wonder how much the pitch makes a difference and how slow the ball would be on it. So you can't ping the ball around as quickly on a 4G
pitch.
Yeah,
but you know just as well as me that if you have the better players, no matter what the surface, you should be going out and imposing your game.
They did.
And coming back with the result. Yeah, they did, but it's that cutting edge. And Rangers have got the players. Morelos was out there. Hadji is out there. Kent's out there. They even brought in Roof, who we haven't really seen much yet, but I'm still got questions on his match fitness because he's not really played much at all. But they've still got players to break Livingston down, especially when you know.
Yeah, but they have.
That,
but then
Livingston don't have Lyndon Dykes. He's off. So they don't. No wonder Livingston had everyone behind the ball, because they can't rely on Hamilton up front or the new lad Salim Kedarusa. I might be saying that wrong. Apologies.
I don't know, but I don't think that makes a difference, Levin. Because if Dykes was up front, it'd be exact same system. You're playing against Rangers.
I disagree.
You know you're not gonna have much. Really?
No way. Yeah, because they'd have a focal point. Livingston, Dykes was an absolute pain against the likes of Rangers and Celtic last season. They didn't have a focal point yesterday, because they're going to have to not change the way they play,
maybe,
but they're going to have to find a bit more of quality up front. And that was a question that came into us from Dr. Grant Campbell, because he asked who's going to be the new striker after the departures of Dykes. Looks like $2 million off to Queen's Park Rangers. Which means he's a Queens player again, which I quite like. Ex-Queen South, of course. But you know that they're missing that front link, and that's why I'm not surprised. And that I think it could be a period of instability for Livingston this season, and they have to unlock that. Yeah,
I like it. Well, I went through. I was just thinking that who could they have got, and if you look at how they scouted and signed Dykes, who is obviously Queen of the South, hence your Queen's comment, where he scored a prolific 10 goals in 86 appearances. I mean,
but
was young.
But his assists are very, very high.
He's young, so, you know, you've got to give him that. And then Livingston, he was 11 goals last year, 28 games. Well, that includes this season as well, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. However, if they're trying to sign someone like that, and I went through why scout and see who scored whatever last season. So if you're looking at a championship player, the most likely, well, the highest scorer last season was Lawrence Shankland. They're not going to be able to afford him. Kevin Nisbet, below him, with 18 goals, he's gone to Hibs. they've got the boy Hemmings at Dundee.
He's on his way back down south.
Yeah, he's gone to Burton Albion, isn't he, I think?
Yeah.
I think he's gone there. Yeah. And then below him, you're looking at Kevin O'Hara, he's gone to Dunfermline. And then Stephen Dawley.
Well, that's the thing. Like, is that questions on Livingston? Maybe the whole summer it's been all about Dykes playing for Scotland or Australia. But there was always interest. Why? And they've brought in this lad. I think it was from Queen's Park.
But they have a tiny budget, and they'll have definitely done their scouting. So they'll have targets that they know they can go for. I would imagine the most likely is in lower league, so the kind of guys that you would know that I've never heard of. And it's very hard to find out who those are unless you know the actual scouts at Livingston to see who they're doing. I don't even know what their scouting setup is like. It might just be Gary Holt, like phoning up any, like he might just have some agents that he knows. So like, who have you got? And then they do their scouting that way because their budget is so small.
A lot of the time, that is the case. Yeah.
Just ask around for players. That's why they rely on those loan deals, stuff like that. There could be, they could look for a lot of players in England, championship clubs, things like that, have young players who might want to be able to play in the Premiership because then it helps their reputation and they can get games that way. But, I mean, there's so many, and I don't know how many of them are built like a Lyndon Dykes or like a Sam Cosgrove type, you know, that kind of big lad.
We'll see. I think it'll be worrying times for Livingston in the next couple of weeks, but hopefully I'm wrong. Rangers will be disappointed because they didn't extend their lead at the top, especially when you have the likes of Celtic not being able to play. So one more match to go, and it's St Mirren, who are 1-0 winners at Hamilton, who in turn have now lost three in a row.
Foley, McGrath now, Foley again. Marias, the ball's bouncing around there. Abika tries to get it out. Tate to keep it alive. Abika! Hamilton concede. St Mirren score. Jonathan Abika with his first goal of the season.
Brian Rice has said he's really concerned, or very concerned, in fact, that they're bottom of the table and have played two more matches than Aberdeen, and they might genuinely not finish 10th this season. You think they will because you like to believe that they will always finish 10th.
Because it has been written in stone, yes.
Yeah. I think they were really naive in this game. They actually still played some nice moments. But I think...
They played some nice moments?
Yeah. Hold on, I'll say it again then. they had some nice passages of play. But what they didn't have, they just can't get into the box. They just can't. And St Mirren actually showed that the players they've brought in, they've just been able to create this enough experience to understand Goodwin's kind of approach to the game, which is quite... not laboured, but patient, and they look for opportunities when they can, like any team. But Jonathan Abika got his goal, and that's fine, but they still lack that cutting edge up front. But when you're playing Hamilton, you might not necessarily worry about what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that you don't have to be worried about Hamilton. I think the problem that Rice has even talked about is that it's a young team, and they're not making all the right decisions, and they have to learn quickly, and they're not. But it's a long season. And they could well go a few games without picking up points, and then they'll find them from somewhere as the youngsters work out more of what they're doing. The problem is time. And then, like, you look at who Hamilton have got in that starting lineup, and you compare it to, I mean, St Mirren and Richard Tate, your favourite, played him there. Switched to more of a sort of diamond shape for this game to counter Hamilton, who are playing a 4-4-2 mostly this season so far. I think St Mirren is better organised because of the older players, more experienced players that they have on the pitch.
And I agree.
Honestly, it's just like simple as that. I don't know.
It is so simple as that, yeah.
Both managers know what they're doing. They know how to coach a team, but you can't control them like a PlayStation when they're actually playing. So, and also, your favourite, another one of your favourites, Jack Alnwick in goal. is doing oh, well. He's doing very Yak. Well. He's scoring highly on who scored, actually. So he's... one to look out for.
Well, maybe that contradicts what I'm saying, that Hamilton don't get into the box enough, so they obviously must have got a good couple of shots. I only saw the highlights, so
yeah,
I've watched the full game from
rapid high speed. The problem I think is in them keeping possession and making the right decisions at certain times. So often the pass that needs to come doesn't, and then a safe one comes afterwards, but the safe one actually puts them under more pressure because they have to go backwards and you draw pressure from the other team. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's about being a bit braver, taking more responsibility in certain situations. It might come.
A positive thing for Hamilton may be that David Templeton's back. You can't expect too much from him early on, but he is that experienced member that they can rely on eventually, I think, when he gets a bit more match fit, because he is that difference in quality between the whole team. And I know he played up front with Moyo, or so it seems on the team sheet.
Oh my God, big moment in life. Andrew what? Considine just followed me on Twitter. Yes!
This must be going back to like the time that there's this guy who just loves talking about Andy Considine.
Andy Considine follows me on Twitter.
Congratulations, JJ.
Thanks.
That's breaking news on the podcast. That's pretty special. Is this is there anything that beats something like this for you? Like, I don't know, birthdays, Christmas? Was it everything wrapped into one for you?
We'll find it this year, I guess. Anyway.
Could you imagine halfway through the season he just blocks you on Twitter and it'll all come crashing down?
Yeah, it might. Well, okay, anyway.
We'll get him on the show.
It's enough about me.
Well, that's it from the weekend's action. Celtic v Aberdeen was, of course, postponed. Aberdeen and St Johnstone are back in action on Thursday. But that doesn't mean we're done here. It's still to come. There's a Scottish side in action in Europe. The latest comings and goings in the transfer window as well. And JJ has been wild.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
It's fantasy time and JJ's gone early. JJ, what have you done?
I went for it. You're too far ahead of me. So
panic stations.
And all my players had either coronavirus or tested negative for coronavirus or they were injured or suspended. I've never been very good at fantasy football. So I used my wild card and replaced the entire team.
Wow.
Yes, and it worked well. I scored so far. I've scored 43 points. I know this is boring to everyone who doesn't, you know, about fantasy football. The average is 39 and I scored 43. So the change has made no difference and you are still far away from me and I'm not sure I can catch up. But we just off mic just learned that you didn't realise that if you make two transfers in 1 week, you get minus 4 points. So that's one for you to know in case you didn't know that, like Slaven.
I'm kind of annoyed because I don't even know what the second transfer was. But regardless, yes. I still got 47 points, which will, 47 minus 4? 43 points.
You're still going to beat me anyway. But we should talk about some new players who are on the game this week that you can be able to buy and whether they're worth getting or not. Albion Ajeti signed for Celtic for 5 million in real life, and he's worth 7 on fantasy football. in fact, all the players, producer Abby was pointing out earlier how all the players are slightly, ever so slightly, overvalued on fantasy compared to real life. Like Harrison
Just
Payton at Ross County is 2.9 million. He's definitely not worth that in real life.
Go on, JJ, you were saying about Albion Ajeti.
Ajeti.
7 million pounds.
That's the one. Ajeti, he's signed from the West Hams, who play down south of the border.
In that Premier League's.
In the Premier Leagues. He'll probably be all right. I think Celtic are going to go back to a 3-5-2 by the looks of things because it's not working at the moment the way they're playing.
Well, I asked some West Ham fans, what do you know about Albion Ajeti? Because I don't know much about him. And they were like, we don't know either. We look forward to seeing him play for Celtic. So we shall wait with bated breath to see if he's any good.
Well, okay, so on Ajeti, so obviously he's just signed and we'll see if he's any use. Like West Ham fans don't know either. Mm-hmm. It could be one that you buy now, and it means that you get the points before anyone else does. It's like a differential almost, because a lot of people might wait to see how he gets on. Form is key in this game. Another one you could look at is Stephen O'Donnell. It's just signed for Motherwell, which we were just talking about earlier. 3.1 million is all right. Motherwell keep clean sheets from time to time. He'll also get forward. Like he was in the box a couple of times, almost scored on the weekend. So that's not a bad one. Colin Doyle's at Kilmarnock. They rarely concede. I don't know what your opinion on Kilmarnock defenders is this season, Slaven.
I think they'll be conceding goals. It's maybe one to avoid, but he's a low value, so...
Yeah. What about Jason Holt? What do you reckon of him? He's gone from Rangers to Livingston.
He could do okay. I don't know that they need a striker, but it's whether or not Livingston can adapt to Jason Holt. That's
well, will
the
thing. You be, will you be buying him?
I will not be buying Jason Holt.
Then I will also not be buying him.
My formula is working pretty well at the moment. I don't need to change too much, so I'm in a positive mood about my fantasy.
Oh, good. And
maybe
being
too overconfident.
Final question for you, Mr. Expert of fantasy football, who doesn't even know the rules but still beats me. For anyone who had Lyndon Dykes in their sides, right, if he does go to Queen's Park Rangers, who is your recommended replacement? Who are you getting?
I would go for Ross Stewart. I actually contemplated getting him in sooner. Just because he's getting into these opportunities. He should have scored a hat-trick at the weekend. He's getting into these, you know, goal-scoring opportunities, and he's going to start scoring some more goals. So he's the person. You'll save some money too, because Lyndon Dykes is, what, 5.7?
Yep.
Ross Stewart, 5.5. Other people probably worth getting in, Callum Hendry. He's going to be playing a lot. You'll probably pick up points here and there just through appearances. So Callum Hendry could also be a good one. And speaking of transfers, the rumour mill is in full flow. Is there a Scottish equivalent to this? The rumour distillery, maybe?
I like
rumour
that.
Unicorn? Rumour brew? No.
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 I like the first one. Distillery.
Rumour distillery. I like that. Yes. Well, is Morelos off? Where's Bolly balling off? Is Dykes a done deal? Looks like it is. Here to answer all of those questions and more is a man who I believe owns more yellow ties than Jim White. It's news editor at Sky Sports News, Anthony Joseph. I've given you the big one here, mate.
I'm not sure about the yellow ties.
Anthony, before we get into specifics, how's the transfer window comparing with others so far? Has COVID made an obvious impact on the Scottish transfer market?
I feel there has been quite a lot of movement in the transfer window for Scotland, which is, I thought they would wait a little bit, but I guess because the season started so much earlier than the others, because the others went, there's been a lot of movement so very quickly. And I guess the big thing, we might be seeing a lot of ins right now, and then further down the line, we might, as Premier League clubs get back and English Championship clubs get back, we might see a few outs.
So some of the rumours then, let's start with the story of the summer. Do we think that Alfredo Morelos is going to be moving to Lille, or is that now...
Well, this is interesting because Lille and the players' representatives have agreed a deal for Morelos to join the club, but Lille and Rangers weren't able to agree a fee. I think a fee of around £15 million was mooted about. But Lille have since signed Jonathan David instead, and last week they told us that they'd be reviewing their situation with Morelos. And like over the weekend, Lille president Gerard Lopez, he didn't commit to pursuing their interest, but he also didn't say it had ended. The funny thing is, and it's amazing, there should be some kind of transfer tree somewhere, because this could rest on Jadon Sancho's transfer to Man United. So Dortmund had been already lining up a replacement for Sancho in Lille's Jonathan Ikone. And Sancho to Man United, well, that appears to be like the Ross and Rachel Willy Wonty drama of the world transfer window, if you can say. If it goes ahead, Lille may look at Morelos again. But at the moment, it doesn't seem like there's any major interest. But like I said earlier, it could be down to clubs aren't back yet, haven't assessed all their options, haven't even gone back into pre-season. Others are just getting into it. I'm sure as this progresses and Premier League clubs and other clubs get back, we'll see some sort of movement. But in terms of Lille, it could rest on the Jadon Sancho transfer to Man United.
So what's the noise with Edward just now? And do Celtic get anyone lined up?
I guess they would go back to their list of striker targets if Edward was to leave. But it's going to take something silly for Celtic to let Edward leave on such an important season. But like,
what do you reckon?
What do you reckon?
25 to 30, maybe 30, because Tierney went for 25, didn't he? And yeah. 30, so
that's
30 million. No, but as in silly money in terms of it's. I get you, but yeah, Edward's probably worth that in the market value, depending if it's an English club going for him, that's probably his market value. But I'm meaning silly money in terms of what Celtic would normally bring in for transfers. But yeah. For top players, yeah, they should be looking for something like that. Again, it's going to be interesting to see what the English clubs do in terms of their spending, because only a few seem to be spending big.
What about staying with Celtic? What about Bolly Bolingoli? Obviously, what happened with him and, you know, lying about his situation, going abroad and not quarantining. Have we seen the last of him at Celtic? Has he ruined his career at the club?
Yeah, I believe he may not be included in Celtic's Champions League squad for tonight's game against Reykjavik. So we'll see if Lennon didn't commit to saying either way, but I think that is the case. So what we do know is that Celtic are looking to offload him. Before his incident, St Etienne, Amiens and Middlesbrough were interested. I think Neil Warnock last week said he doesn't think he's going to go back in for him. We also know that Amiens have since made a loan bid for him with an option to buy for £2.3 million. Neil Lennon yesterday claimed there hadn't been any bids in for him, but I think he's playing down that transfer speculation. The issue is that Celtic don't have a replacement lined up for him. They would be silly to offload Ballingolly now and leave themselves only with Greg Taylor while they're going with Champions League qualifiers, and it's going to be a fixture pile-up because they've had two games postponed. They also want to fully investigate his conduct and issue any relevant punishment that he may come his way. It may be a wee while before we see any movement in this. And funnily enough, I was going to say that they shouldn't have let Johnny Hayes go, but then I remembered he was one of Aberdeen's coronavirus rule breakers.
Fair. Aaron Hickey to Bayern?
Yeah, that's potentially huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there are reports that he'll be joining Bayern Munich on a 5-year deal. We haven't had confirmation on that as of yet, but it was expected. 17-year-old, it's been very impressive since he broke into the first team over a year ago. He was in Bologna looking around their training ground 2 weeks ago, and then he went to Munich last week to see Bayern's very world-class setup. So I think he was sold on that move quite quickly. And what's going to be interesting is that in a few years, we may have a situation where Scotland have three world-class players and they're all left-backs.
Yeah, he's only got Alphonso Davies ahead of him as well at Bayern to break into the first team. Last one we've got know about is Ross McCrory to Aberdeen, potentially a loan move.
So, yeah, he was having his medical at Aberdeen yesterday, so that should be done. But that was quite a twist in the tail late on, because Hibs were the team that looked like they were going to be signing him, as they had two bids in for him. The thing is, Gerrard had said that he needs first-team football and that he had a couple of options in front of him, but he wasn't keen on Rangers facing him this season. So I guess that with a loan deal, it'll be possible for Rangers to control that, so he won't come up against Rangers with Aberdeen. But yeah, like you said, it's a loan deal with an option to buy, so it could be a permanent transfer.
I was going to say, actually, it's not the only Scot that Bayern Munich have been brought over. I know they brought that under-17 player for Celtic, Liam Morrison. It's interesting that there's quite a few players that, you know, Bundesliga clubs are keeping an eye on, a lot of Scottish talent. Very interesting.
They got Liam Morrison last season, I think it was it last summer, from Celtic. And they're also expected to sign Barry Hepburn, who's 16 years old, I believe, and he's also at Celtic. He could be on his way to Bayern Munich very soon as well. So a lot of Scottish talent going to some big clubs.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it, totally ad-free, via The Athletic.
Time to top the odds now with producer Abby, who joins me. First up, Aberdeen are back in action on Thursday. They face St Johnstone. Normally, I'd be giving Aberdeen the win here, but I'm not so sure this time round. So what did Paddy Power say?
Paddy Power, a bit like you, actually. They've got Aberdeen and St Johnstone both at 17-10 to win this match, which I found as a bit of a surprise. The draw is a 2-1, so the trend of the last game week of no home wins might be broken here. I don't know.
As for the weekend, I really like the look of St Mirren against Ross County. Who have Paddy Power got winning that one, though?
Paddy Power are backing St Mirren here, the home side, 7-5 to win this one. Despite Ross County being higher up in the table, they're 9-5. And if you fancied the draw here, that is 23-10.
And I think Motherwell are going to go all out against Hamilton as well. What can I get for a 3-goal winning margin on this?
If you fancy a 3-goal winning margin, so a 3-0 win for Motherwell, that's 9-1. But Paddy Power do think that the 1-0 win in favour of Motherwell is more likely at 5-1.
Interesting. Thanks, Abby. Remember, gamble responsibly, and when the fun stops, stop. So if you think there's no more British sides in Europe, think again, because on Friday, Glasgow City are taking on Wolfsburg in the Women's Champions League quarter-finals. Here to tell us what to expect from the Scots, women's sport reporter, podcast host and journalist Heather Dewar. Heather, for those of us who don't know too much about the women's game in Scotland, tell us about Glasgow City and what they've already achieved, because they've done this before.
Yeah, well, they've reached this stage of the competition, the quarterfinal stage, once before. But, you know, as far as their history, they have such an amazing history in Scotland. I mean, they've dominated the game for so many years. They won the Scottish Cup last time around. I mean, it's just, they are the kind of team that I think it would be fair to say that most teams going up against them in the past would probably fear to a certain degree. When it comes to the Champions League, well, the gates are really wide open, aren't they? I mean, it's a totally different ball game, but they're the ones, certainly, if you were to choose any Scottish team, the likes of Hibernian, for example, have also played in the Champions League. But it's Glasgow City, the ones where you think, yeah, you know, they really could pull something out of the bag here. And they've put on some brilliant performances in the past. I mean, we look at how they got to this stage and the way that they came through against Bromby was just absolutely incredible. And they did it on penalties. 2-2, it ended on aggregate against the Danes. And an amazing display where they won 3-1 on pens. And the night was just incredible. I mean, I was there. I mean, everybody from the team was in tears. There was piling on top of each other. Just absolutely brilliant. So as far as the game goes, as I say, they've really dominated. I mean, they are the ones that seem to have, you know, historically brought on some of the biggest and brightest talent. They're the ones that certainly say that they've had, you know, semi-professional players. But, you know, they've got Scott Booth as a coach. He's done some brilliant things for them. And they've just made their mark on the game. And, you know, you talk about women's football and what they've done for it. They really have been at the forefront of the women's game. Now things are starting to change domestically. So I'll be very interested to see what happens, certainly in terms of the domestic season, when that all kicks off again in October. You know, but we're talking about the Champions League for now and whether they'll be able to do something when it comes to this stage of the competition. They face a mammoth, mammoth task against Wolfsburg. And, you know, when the draw came out, really, I mean, I'm sure there were massive sighs and a lot of shock when that happened, because could they have picked a worse opponent have been drawn out the hat for them? Who knows? Because this side are phenomenal. And let's not forget, guys, they've already wrapped up their Bundesliga and they won it. So no easy challenge ahead.
What would you say the gap in quality, if there is one, between the two sides are? And Glasgow City have some decent players of their own, right? And we've talked about Scott Booth, decent coach. What do you think the gap is realistically?
Oh, I think the gap's pretty huge. It's pretty huge. I mean, you look at the list of players for Wolfsburg. I mean, it's absolutely rammed full of internationals and internationals from all parts as well. You know, you've got Sweden international Fridolina Rolfo, Dutch international Dominic Janssen, who netted twice, for example, in the first leg against FC 20. You've got the Polish international, who's really well known, Eva Pajor too. It's absolutely packed full of talent. I mean, you know, playing in the Bundesliga, you know, it's something that so many females would aspire to, you know, to be a part of. And it's, you know, they are the team that you want to be playing for. But in terms of, you know, Glasgow City, I mean, not taking anything away from the talent in there, but, you know, they've brought on some new signings. Scott Booth has just announced today, actually, his fourth signing of the summer. They've got talent in there, but, you know, when it comes to the gap, I think, you know, you look at the history, as I say, of Wolfsburg and what they've done. They've reached the last eight for the eighth consecutive season in the Champions League. They've won the Champions League twice. I mean, can you imagine if a Scottish team won the Champions League? I mean, it would just be absolutely phenomenal. And you look at the record as well on their route to it. I mean, they beat the Kosovo side, Mitrovica, 15-0 on aggregates. And that was including a huge 10-0 away win in Pristina. They knocked out FC 20, 7-0 on aggregate as well to make this stage. So really, you know, their dominance can't be underestimated. And I think most people would say that when you look at this game ahead, you know, on paper, without doubt, you know, they will be the favourites for this.
Well, the game's on Friday. And if people want to show their support, how can they get their eyes across the game?
It's on BBC Alba, so it'll be live on BBC Alba. And it's also on Sportsound, actually, for the BBC. So you'll be able to listen across to that. So yeah, do show your support for Glasgow City. You know, they've done so much, as I say, for the women's game. And just to reach this stage of the competition is a phenomenal achievement for what they get, you know, and for the backing that they get. And let's not forget that a lot of the teams that are playing in this competition, the standard and quality of their domestic leagues is big, you know, it's impressive. As I say, you know, you look at Scandinavia, for example, and a lot of the Scandinavian teams that come out, or Holland, these are the kind of countries that a lot of, you know, footballers in this country aspire to go and play in. So, you know, and the likes of Arsenal as well, you know, you've got some top talent. For a Scottish team who play at Petershill Park, you know, to reach this stage of the Champions League is an extremely impressive thing. And I don't think, you know, whether they win this one or not, and as I say, I don't think, honestly speaking, anyone will expect them to win it, but whether they do or not, I think they have to be applauded for reaching this stage.
Heather Jewell there. By the way, JJ, you know how all the talk in Scottish Premiership is about 10 in a row? Glasgow,
well, for
can
some
throw
people.
That into Celtic's faces, because Glasgow City are on 13 in a row. That's where the,
it's a monopoly. End the league.
Well, if you listen to Heather, maybe it's, you know, going to be an interesting season next time.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Good luck to Glasgow City on Friday in the Women's Champions League. But that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. Thanks to the Little Kicks for our theme tune. Thanks, JJ, for keeping me company. And as well to our producer, Abby, who makes us sound so brilliant. Or maybe better
well,
than that.
It's up to you to decide that, yeah.
We'll be back next week. But for now, cheerio.
You've been listening to The Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network, at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.